Thanks to Calm, the number one wellness app, for supporting the Productivity Show. Reduce stress and anxiety through guided meditations, improve focus with curated music tracks, and rest and recharge with Calm's imaginative sleep stories for children and adults. Calm is offering you an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/TPS.
Welcome to the Productivity Show, a podcast where we believe that you can get the important things done without having to sacrifice your health, family, and things that matter to you. My name is Tian, and I'm the founder of Asian Efficiency, where we help people become more productive at work and in life. And today I'm joined by my co-host, Brooks Duncan. How's life, Brooks?
Life is good. I'm enjoying summer. Summer in Vancouver is the one time of the year where everything's generally pretty awesome. So yeah, I'm loving it.
Well, you're very fortunate because you have all four seasons. I just have a little chilly weather and then blaring 40 degrees Celsius and or 105 Fahrenheit for our Americans here. So there's no seasons here. I'm just in shorts and t-shirts all the time. Brooks, what are we talking about today?
All right. Well, here's the thing. Whenever we do a Q&A or a webinar, and we've done quite a few lately, we always ask for questions and we always get questions about how we do things. You know, what's our workstation setup like? What kind of apps and tools do we use? What kind of workflows do we have? How do we handle this or that situation? How do we basically become efficient? And so what we thought we would do, because I feel like it's a long time since we've done an episode like this, is just basically talk about how we do things, you know, how our planning goes, what tools and apps and physical devices and stuff like that we use, how we use them all together. And basically, if you're looking to maybe redo your setup at home, you want to try some new apps, you just want to get some inspiration for how other people do things, maybe you're kind of like stuck in a rut and you want to change things up, you're going to like this episode because we are going to get all into that stuff. Very excited.
Yeah, so before we kick it off here, next week we're going to be talking to the CEO of Boomerang, and Brooks did an interview with him, so I'm really excited for that to come out. I'm going to kick off the top three resources here. So the first one is some of my favorite things here. So that is the Vital Proteins Matcha Lattes. So this is kind of like a matcha latte green powder. It's something I've been drinking and enjoying quite a bit lately, and it has collagen as well, so it's great for your skin and for your overall health. And it's all done in one powder, so you just have to have some hot water, stir it up a little bit, and you're good to go. It's delicious, and if you like to add a little bit of sweetness to it, I always recommend adding a little bit of honey to it as well. The next resource is Universal Control. So this is something for Mac OS, and what you can do is you can put your iPad beside your computer and then you can use your mouse to control your iPad. And this is something that is really helpful if you have to use like your iPad as a secondary computer or as a second screen. And you have to maybe upgrade your software a little bit to make sure that, you know, you have at least Monterey and iOS 15.4. So that's all good to go. But if you want to use your iPad as a second monitor, then you want to make sure you enable universal control there. And then the third is a kind of like a hack slash shortcut. So in the web browser, what you can do is if you type in docs.new, so docs.new or sheets.new, from the search bar, you're like, that's the place where you typically, you know, enter like URLs and such. What it will do is it will actually create a new Google Doc or Google Sheet for you. So this is kind of like a cool shortcut to consider, especially if you combine it with something like TextExpander, you can quickly generate a new Google Doc or Google Sheet there. So you can go even more extreme and, you know, automate it with other different things, but go check it out and try it out as you're listening to this episode. And speaking of, you can find links to everything that we share on the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/413. All right, Brooks, we're going to be talking about workflows today and personal productivity systems. So, you know, one of the things we're known for here at AE is teaching the 25X productivity system. It's kind of like our unique methodology that has elements of the T framework. And we teach people like the 25 steps to master productivity. And one of the 25 steps is setting up your personal systems, which consists of three things. You want to make sure you have a calendar, you have a to-do list, and a note-taking app. So I'm curious, what are yours? And let's just start with the calendar. What's the calendar that you're using?
Yeah, so for me, I use Fantastical on the Mac and iOS. So that is unfortunately a Mac and iOS only app. There isn't a Windows version of it. But this is an app I started using as my calendar a long time ago. And a lot of the things I like about it are you can do really good natural language. So you can just start typing and it kind of figures out what your calendar event is from that. And I know Apple's calendar and even Outlook does a pretty good job of that now too, but Fantastical is kind of the original. I also like how I have this mini window sitting off to the side that I can bring up using keyboard shortcuts. So anytime I want to check my calendar, I just bring up the little mini window and it does a good job on iOS as well. So that's what I use. I use Google Calendar as the backend. So all my devices, all my calendars are synced with Google Calendar. And then so I can see it from any device. If I'm on my Windows computer, I just log into Google Calendar on the web browser. I don't have it integrated with Outlook or anything like that. But that works pretty well for me. How about you, Tam? What do you use?
So here in the live stream, we have one of our Productivity Academy members, Joel. He said that I converted him to BusyCal, even though he was a faithful Fantastical user. Well, Joel, I'm here to do a 180 on you, because if you've been listening to the Productivity Show for a while, I've been one of the most fanatical users of BusyCal, and it's one app I've been recommending for so many years now. But I've actually switched over to Fantastical all the way now, both on iOS and on the Mac. And the reason for that is it's not because BusyCal is bad. Like, I think it's still a great app, and I still would recommend it. However, the difference between BusyCal and Fantastical is I think Fantastical has a better UI, but that was not good enough for me to switch over. What kind of pushed me over the edge is that Fantastical has a lot more innovation and updates that make things a little bit easier and more seamless than BusyCal. So BusyCal has like very slow updates, meaning they don't innovate their UI, they don't innovate the program as much, whereas Fantastical has like updates every week or every few weeks. And so just to give you a really simple example, in Fantastical, at least on the desktop version, if you have a Zoom link somewhere in the entry of your calendar events, now there's a button that says join now when the meeting is about to come up on the left sidebar. You know, so you don't have to like click on the calendar entry, find the link, and then click on the link to join the meeting. It's actually right from the calendar app. You just click on the button that is really tiny that says join now. And if you click on it, you join the meeting right away. So it's like little things like that that makes Fantastical a little bit more seamless than other calendar apps that I've seen. So I've actually made the switch from BusyCal to Fantastical. And if you know me, it's very difficult to persuade me to move from one app to another, especially one that I've been using for so many years. So again, I don't hate on BusyCal. I think it's still a great app. It's still a great recommendation for those who are looking a little bit more beyond just a default calendar app, because it has a lot of advanced features. But I find that Fantastical has the same features now, plus a better UI.
Yeah, I really like Fantastical's iOS widgets as well. So the way I have it is I have it on a stack on my home screen with some other stuff, which we'll get into later. And yeah, it always does a really good job. And yeah, I'm loving it. If you're a Windows user, I think if it was me, I would probably just use Outlook. That is the easiest thing to use. And that is a good and powerful calendar app as well. But if you're in the Apple ecosystem, check out Fantastical. Now, Tan, question for you. You know, using a calendar app is one thing, and almost, you know, it almost doesn't matter which app you use in a way, you know, picking the app, but actually like doing something with it is like the productivity next level. So how do you use your calendar? And by that I mean, are you somebody who like hyper schedules every single minute of the day? Do you time block big focus blocks, or you mainly just use calendar for meetings and appointments and anything else kind of like goes from there? How do you actually use your calendar?
Well, I've tried many things over the years, from scheduling every 15 minutes to having an empty calendar to everything in between. So I find that what works for me now is when I plan my week, which usually happens on a Sunday, I plan for three 90-minute blocks on my calendar to make sure I focus on like the three outcomes that I'm looking for. So another way of saying this is every week I try to accomplish like three mini goals, and I set aside like 90 minutes for each mini goal that I have scheduled on my calendar. And typically it's earlier in the week as well, so that if I maybe get behind or I get distracted or I don't get to it, I have the rest of the week to kind of catch up on them. And so that's kind of what my typical week looks like. So if I have a mini goal, and the mini goal could be as simple as, oh, I want to make sure I have the show notes for this episode completely done, right? Because preparing show notes can take 30 minutes, it can take 90 minutes. You just never know, depending on the research, especially if it's a guest episode where I try to research the guest. It can sometimes take an hour and a half easily. Because you have to do a lot of research, listen to podcast episodes, watching YouTube videos on them, reading articles about people, maybe reading segments of their book and stuff. So it's always different, but I always try to prepare 90 minutes for each mini goal that I have. However, if we're kind of like in a sprint or maybe in a season in the business where things are a little bit more crazy and we have like a product launch coming up or something really important is coming up and we have to like rally the troops and make sure stuff is getting done, then I'll set aside 90-minute blocks every single day. So Monday through Friday, there's a 90-minute block to work on something that moves the needle forward in some shape or form. Sometimes I don't even know what those 90-minute blocks are going to be because things might be moving so fast, but at least I have it blocked off so that, you know, if someone has my Calendly link where they can schedule stuff with me, they just can't all of a sudden, block my time or take up my time. So that's kind of how I use it. How about you?
Yeah, I think the way that you do it is the best way to do it, especially if you're somebody who does get those external calendar invites, people trying to book time on your calendar, and that sort of thing. I think that is really the way to go, because I think a lot of times people kind of think of putting tasks on their calendar and they think, oh, you shouldn't do that. That's what a to-do list is for. And yeah, we're going to get into to-do lists, obviously. But I think it's more about making space so that you can do the task, whatever they happen to be. Me personally, I'm in a bit of a different situation than you. I actually don't get too many external meeting requests. Like you tend to do more of that than I do. My week is generally pretty routine. So I don't know the best term for this, but basically the way I think of it is I kind of like mentally time block. Like I know what I'm going to generally work on at certain points throughout the week. So I don't actually put it on my calendar, but it just kind of like works out that way. And it's worked okay for me. But if I was in a situation like you where I do have more external meetings and stuff, demands on my time, I would for sure do the time blocking thing. That is definitely the way to go. All right. So let's move on from that. So I kind of like reference to-do lists and stuff like that. So probably that makes the most sense to move on there. So let's talk about to-do apps, systems, tools, and stuff like that. So Tam, why don't you walk us through how you kind of decide what to work on and how you actually like get it done?
Yeah. So I've been using OmniFocus for, like a decade now. Right. And I use it both on iOS and Mac. So that's kind of my default app. And that workflow hasn't changed in so many years. So if you remember back in the day when we had an OmniFocus course called OmniFocus Premium Post, that workflow is still the same today. Like nothing has changed. The major difference maybe is that I don't use contacts as much because I find that contacts, and we did a whole episode on this, like are contacts still even relevant today? And the answer is not really. That's the only difference. Like I still use a few like waiting for and that kind of stuff. But other than that, everything is pretty much the same. And I find that once I've found a workflow that just worked for me, there's no need to tinker with it or try to make it more efficient or anything like that. I can just really focus on what needs to be done. So I can focus on those 9-minute blocks that I have on my calendar. Say, hey, okay, this needs to be done. And off we go. So typically I try to, whatever comes to my mind, I try to put it in the inbox. And then on Sunday, I typically process that inbox and just go over it and just say, okay, what's this? Is this a task? Okay, let's make sure we assign it to the right project or list, and then organize everything and make sure there's a next action for everything. And then when I get to it, we can get it rocking and rolling. So I don't really worry about like my workflows anymore in terms of task management. It's just, can I actually get the stuff done?
I guess this is a function of us working together for a long time, and also a function of the fact that I was a very early AE customer, but my workflow is pretty similar. It is also based off of the OmniFocus premium post from way back in the day. And yeah, I do the same thing. So OmniFocus is my main task manager on Mac and iOS. The problem with OmniFocus was always, okay, well, what about when you're on a Windows computer or something like that? And I find the OmniFocus web version is actually pretty good. Like, I wouldn't use it as my main task manager, but in the way that I use it, which is wanting to access my tasks from my Windows machine, it works fine. And so I use OmniFocus for pretty much my life and my work. I also use, of course, Jira and Confluence, which are the tools that we use here at AE. And we're going to get more into the workflow of how we translate that into actionable action stuff in a bit. But basically, yeah, same thing. OmniFocus, choose my main tasks, and kind of like go through that that workflow. If I was recommending to somebody starting out, though, like, I definitely love OmniFocus. I've used it for, I don't even know how long, years and years and years and years and years. If someone was asking, hey, what's a good task manager to start with? I think I might even recommend Todoist. I think it's a little more easy to use. It's a little more frequent updates, like you said, Tan. That is a really solid choice. So I would probably start with that. But if you do have kind of more complex needs and you're in the Apple ecosystem, obviously, I would definitely do it OmniFocus. But if you're a Windows user, definitely check out Todoist or maybe Microsoft To-Do. All right. So you mentioned putting things into the OmniFocus inbox. And I guess that is a good way to spring onto the next topic, which is, what about like note taking? How do things get into your task system? If you're either A, at your desk, and B, out walking around or something like that, and something comes to your mind that is a to-do or a note, an idea, how do you capture that and make it actionable or whatever? Let's start with you, Tan. How do you do that?
So for note-taking, I like Evernote. That's my default app. I've been, again, using it for, I don't know, 8-9 years now. Probably a paying customer for majority of that time. So if I'm out and about, I typically store everything in OmniFocus first. Like, I typically just open it up and store stuff in there. And then when I process things on Sunday, that's when I try to figure out, is this a task? And if it's not, then it goes into Evernote. Now, sometimes when I'm putting stuff in my phone, I might know right away that this is obviously not a task. And so I might put stuff in Evernote right away. So to give an example, if I have to remember an idea that I have, then I have like a specific list in Evernote that I store ideas in. So that's a really simple example. But for the most part, everything goes into OmniFocus. Whether that's on my phone or on my desktop, like, having keyboard shortcuts is really helpful for this. And that goes for both platforms, like your phone and for the desktop. Now, on your phone, it might be using shortcuts or something like that. But basically, you want to make it as simple as possible to add stuff into your stuff, right? Or into your inbox, I should say. And so for me, everything goes into OmniFocus first, unless I know 100% that it's not a task. And then once I have stuff in there, it's basically being processed. I typically don't try to process things day by day. And one of the things I like about Evernote as well is that the web clipper feature is probably my favorite feature. And the reason I was actually a long time user of DevonThink, but the problem with DevonThink back in the day, and I don't know if this is fixed now, is that if you use the web clipper, it would reload the page in order to clip the page. So the problem with that was, if you, for example, just bought something, you know, and you're on the, like, what people call the thank you page, if you had to reload the page, and oftentimes it would not reload the page because it would use, like, you know, a temporary state, like a post submission, if we want to get really technical, which you can't really, you know, renew the page and then get the same information. And so you would get like a blank page, or the page has expired or whatnot, versus with Evernote, it would basically be able to capture everything. And that made me kind of like say, okay, I'm going to stick with Evernote, even though it has the same feature set. And so I've been using Evernote ever since. And the cool thing about Evernote is, like, you don't have to be a power user to get a lot of benefit from it. But if you are, then there's like levels to what you can do with Evernote. And it kind of grows with you over time, because as you become more proficient using like short search terms to how you organize stuff. It makes it really easy to organize things, and you don't have to be meticulous about it. Like, I just put everything in my inbox list. I kind of categorize stuff where things need to go, but you don't have to because the search feature is so good. So that's how I do things. How about you?
I think it's interesting that you said you don't process it every day. And I feel like, and you can tell me if this is right, but I feel like a hidden benefit of that might be that by the time you do process it, like maybe it's later in the week or whatever, some of the stuff you captured might be irrelevant. And so you could just like get rid of it. Whereas if you're processing it in like almost real time, then you're spending time on things that turned out not to matter after all. That's an interesting idea. I might try that. But for me, so what I do is kind of similar. A lot of what I do capture goes to OmniFocus inbox. This is especially true for like emails and stuff like that, if it's actionable. If I'm at my desk, I have a paper notebook that sits beside my desk, and I've tried different things over the years. Like when I'm in meetings and stuff like that, I've tried typing. I even had it in my head. I have an iPad Pro or an iPad Air now with the Apple Pencil. And I even had an idea I was going to be like all digital and take notes with the pencil and stuff like that. But it never really stuck. So I just have a cheap paper notebook that I have beside my desk. That's when I'm at my desk. If I'm on the go, I tend to use an app called Drafts, which we've talked about lots on the podcast. That is generally where I capture things and then send it either to the OmniFocus inbox or wherever it needs to go. The way I handle the processing is I actually have a daily task in OmniFocus that goes at the end of the day. And what the task says is process notebook, which is a throwback to when I used to carry field notes around. But I kind of know what it really means is go through your OmniFocus inbox, go through your Drafts inbox, and look at your paper notebook and just see if there's anything you need to like capture and take action on. I'm not going to lie and say I manage to do that every single day. Sometimes, like you said, it does take a couple days. For me, the most important thing is capturing it. And then everything else, we kind of like, I'll catch in my weekly review, which we'll get to in a little bit. Maybe meditating more regularly was one of your intentions for the year. How's that going for you? Well, whether you're crushing your goals or need a little boost, Calm can help. With Calm, you can jumpstart or continue your meditation practice and find peace of mind today. We're partnering with Calm, the number one mental wellness app, to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. If you go to calm.com/TPS, you'll get a special offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, and new content is added every single week. With Calm, you can reduce stress and anxiety through guided meditations, improve focus with curated music tracks, and rest and recharge with Calm's imaginative sleep stories for children and adults. Like me, for example, I used one last night. There's even new daily movement sessions designed to relax your body and uplift your mind. Over 100 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds. I've been a paid subscriber of Calm for years and years and years. I like it for two main reasons. Number one, the guided meditations. I use the daily Calm personally. It gets me centered and focused and ready for the day. It's part of my morning routine. And number two, the sleep stories. Now, I don't use them every single night, but when I have trouble sleeping, they just work like a charm. Last night, in fact, I used one called The Ancient Paths of Anatolia, which is one of my favorites. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/TPS. Go to calm.com/TPS for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/TPS. All right. So let's kind of like put some of this together. We've talked about calendar, we've talked about capturing, we've talked about tasks. But you referenced how you plan your week on Sundays. Let's like dive a little into that some more and talk about like what is your like workflow? How do things actually go from this planning process into whatever it is you're going to do? Like maybe you can talk us through your day planning and planning workflow.
Sure. So I think on a high level, I like to front load the week as much as possible. So typically Monday through Wednesday is when I try to get like let's just say 70% of all the work done that needs to be done in a given week, so that I have Thursday and Friday to catch up on things if need to be. And if I'm done before then great. I have an easier rest of the week, and maybe I could, you know, enjoy a 3-day weekend or something, right? Instead of showing up on Friday. Speaking of, we have 4-day weekends or 4-day work weeks now here at AE during the summer, which is great. And everyone seems to enjoy that. So now that that is in place, like I even try to front load even more and just make sure that, hey, everything is really done in the first 3 days. So that's kind of like my typical approach, is just to say, hey, let's front load as much as possible. So you won't find me going out on the Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday night at all. So any sort of social commitments or dinner or things that people want to do with me, I just say, no, Monday through Wednesday, this is my time. Like I want to do as much as possible, but catch me on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or whatever you want to do with me. So that's kind of like how I like to do things. And when I talk about like the three outcomes that I'm looking for, my three meeting goals for the week, I try to get them done Monday through Wednesday as much as possible. And so I'm in a very fortunate situation to be able to say, hey, this is how I'm going to dictate my day. This is what my day is going to look like. And this is what an ideal day looks like for me. And I try to kind of plan it that way and just say, hey, I'm most energetic and focused in the morning. So let's make sure that I align the things that I need to do during that time as well. So typically, if people try to book a meeting with me, it's never before 11 a.m. 11 a.m. is usually when we have our daily huddle. So before that, I try to get as much work done as possible so that I'm kind of aiming for the idea of like, I want to be done by 1 o'clock as much as possible. Now, that's not really realistic, but that's kind of like what I'm trying to aim for, so that if it does happen, great, right? If it doesn't happen, even if I miss, then maybe I might be done by 2 or 3, and that's great too. So that's kind of like my overall approach. And then I just try to fill in my blocks on my calendar to kind of like aid me in that direction. So that's kind of like the high level approach to it. How about you?
Yeah, I definitely do front loading as well in the week and also in the day. And one of the benefits of the way that we do projects at AE with Scrum, which I'll link to an episode where we talk about that in the show notes. Basically, what I do is I'll look at our Scrum board. I'll see what needs to be done. And usually for me, it's not like it's picking up pieces for longer term projects. Like that's kind of how Scrum works. You're not like doing everything at once. You're kind of like working on what you can. And what I'll do is I will first look there and see, okay, what are my most important tasks from that? I will also layer in that things from kind of outside the AE world. And then those tend to be later in the evening. And I just kind of like figure out what my day is going to look like. And usually, like you said, I totally front load everything. Sometimes stuff comes up, like anybody, you know, the week and the day never works perfectly. But by kind of like sorting it out early in the morning and front loading things as much as possible, if something does blow up later in the day, it's kind of all right because I've already done my most important task. So that has worked really well for me. Another thing that I try to do is I look at educational opportunities. So I try to always be working on some like little course or book or something like that. And I'll try to make sure I'm scheduling in time for doing that as well. Now, that's like on a daily basis. But what about kind of like longer term? Because, you know, we talk about not just working on the urgent stuff, but the kind of like longer term stuff. So how do you kind of like layer that in? What kind of like longer term planning do you do, Tan, other than just daily and weekly?
So as part of the 25X productivity system, as we were designing this whole thing, one of the things we really wanted to make sure we included was how do we plan for the long term and then execute on that, right? And so if you break it down from like a high level point of view, it would be, hey, let's set a goal or a particular outcome that we're aiming for in the next 90 days. And then hence why we have the course 90-day goal getter, which kind of explains that process in more detail. And then we break it down into like a quarterly plan, a monthly plan, a weekly plan, and then a daily plan. So we just talked about how we do things daily and weekly, but it's really derived from our monthly plan and from our quarterly plan. So to put that in perspective, like they're all related to each other, right? So for example, if the quarterly goal is to, let's just say, write a book, right? It might be a little crazy in one quarter, but let's just take that as an example. then what that would look like is, okay, I have 3 months to do this. How do I break this down in a monthly segment? So in the first month, what do I do then? In the second month, what do I do then? And in the third month, what do I do then? So for example, if I already have an outline, I could say, hey, let's try to get the first third done in the first month, the second third in the second month, and the final third in the third month. And then you just break it down week by week. And so the cool thing about this is that you iterate. So it's not like a fixed process, because 1 week you might be ahead and that's great. And another week you might be behind. And so you have week by week opportunities to kind of adjust to make sure that you stay on track. But as long as you have those milestones in place, you're pretty much aware of where things are at. So when you do quarterly planning, and this is a whole different episode we've done in the past too about quarterly planning and monthly planning, and we can add links to those in the show notes. But the big idea is that you probably will spend a few hours thinking about, like, what's the quarterly goal? How do I make this a reality? What needs to be happening and what needs to be true month by month to make this a reality? And you have to kind of sit down and really think through those steps. And if you can't think through those steps, you probably don't have a good plan to execute. It's kind of the idea that if you don't know how to do something, yes, you can figure it out day by day or doing it, but it's usually not, in my opinion, as effective as knowing, like, okay, if I'm trying to fix a motorcycle, I need to know the basics of what a motorcycle looks like, how it works, how the components work together before I start working on it, versus, all right, I don't know anything about motorcycles, I'm just going to grab my tools and figure it out. Like, that to me does seems very ineffective. And so when it comes to quarterly goals, it's the same way. If I have a quarterly goal, let's put some big milestones in place. I kind of know what to aim for and then work towards that. And that's where the monthly plan comes in.
Yeah. What I found really helpful for this, having a time set aside, I found the GTD Weekly Review for this. Now, GTD Weekly Review, and we've done episodes on that. I'll make sure to drop a link to an episode in the show notes. But what I found really helpful is, aside from the usual stuff like making sure your to-do list is clean, you know, reviewing your calendar back and forth, what I found really helpful is just to spend a moment or two just making sure that you're setting aside time for those Q2 from the Eisenhower matrix, you know, things that are not urgent but important, making time for those. And I've found the GTD Weekly Review really helpful for that. And I always have a step in there just to, like, give some thought to that. So I also, on a monthly basis, I review my journal just to see what are some kind of like action items to try and pull out of that so that I can prove things in the next month. And those together have kind of worked pretty well. Now, I have a question from Joel that's kind of related to this topic. Joel, member of the Productivity Academy, I asked this in the Productivity Academy Slack, and I'm curious what your thought is on this, Tam. Like, what about things that are in your kind of like someday maybe list or your holding list or whatever you want to call it? How often do you review those to make sure that they're still relevant? And do you ever find it hard to cut things because he does, because you feel like, oh, I'm going to do it someday? What's your feeling around someday maybe type stuff?
Yeah, so I typically look at them maybe once a month. This is typically when I do my monthly planning to kind of see if there's anything I can kind of sneak in there. So when I go into monthly planning, which we've done a whole episode about, like, the basic idea is that you look at your quarterly goal and you're trying to assess, okay, what needs to be happening this month so that I can make sure I'm moving forward towards completing or achieving my quarterly goal. So oftentimes you already have kind of like big things planned that you want to do, right? But let's face it, you also have a personal life. You have a normal life outside of work and other things and that you want to try to do and accomplish. And oftentimes I'll try to pull things from there, from the someday maybe list. It could be like purchases that I want to make, to things that I want to do or things that I want to plan for that aren't related this quarter. So to give an example, let's say this quarter I'm working on, you know, publishing a book. Let's say this is quarter three, but in quarter four, I want to go on vacation somewhere, right? So on the someday maybe list, I might have a list that says, hey, I want to go to the Bahamas in the winter or something like that, right? Now, I could work that in somehow into my monthly plan and say, hey, yes, I'm going to still focus on my goal, but I also want to pull something from my monthly list and say, oh yeah, I actually want to go to the Bahamas during Q4. So I can kind of put that in there as well. So I typically only look at it once a month and kind of pull stuff from there as needed. And it's typically like a pretty quick glance. And so once you look at it once a month, you kind of typically know what's kind of in there. And I don't cut stuff from there as much as I do. I find that if it's in there, it's going to be done at some point. Like there's no rush to it. There's no deadline. There's no set date and time that things have to be done. So if it's there, it's there. And if I go through the list once a month and I find like, this is actually not that relevant anymore, then I might just cut it. And if it's important enough, it will find its way back somehow in some shape or form in the future. So that's how I do it.
Yeah, I'm a pretty happy cutter for the exact same reason. If something's truly important, it will find its way back somehow. And kind of related to that is let's talk about the E word, which is email. What apps and platforms are you using for email these days? Are you just using the stock apps or what are you doing with that?
Ooh, I'm going to be the boring person here. So my iPhone, I just use the stock app, but the cool thing now, I think, in my opinion, is I really don't deal with email on my phone anymore. So it's not even on my home screen anymore. It's like literally in the app library. Like I have to search for it to open up my email app because my workflow nowadays is I have my executive assistant, Jury. So we meet twice a week. She will tell me like, hey, here are the emails that you need to reply to because I can't answer them. I will reply to those emails and then she handles the rest. So if there's anything happening in between, well, people will just have to wait. And if you or someone else on the team needs me, they know never to email me because we pretty much have a no email policy here. It's kind of like an unofficial policy. We've never said it or stated it, but it's just like nobody uses email internally. We just use Slack and Jira comments for stuff. And so if people really need me and it's urgent, they know to call or text me. It's one of our communication protocol guidelines that we have here, both at work, but also in my personal life. Like if you need me right now and it's urgent, call me. Like people just generally know that. And if you don't, then you can get a response whenever I can get back to you. So email is typically the slowest path to get to me.
Do you care at all about inbox zero? This is a goal for a lot of people, getting their email inbox down to zero. Is that a goal for you? Do you care about that? What's your feeling about inbox zero?
Ooh, well, I think a few years ago, I would have liked to have it. Now that my inbox is mostly delegated, I don't know if it's inbox zero or inbox 500. Like, I have no clue until I go in there. So it's up to the EA to kind of make sure it's all addressed. So I know this is not like a very typical solution for most people, but even if my EA didn't handle my inbox, I wouldn't care about inbox zero as much. Like a lot of my friends do inbox 5 or inbox 12, like they have a bunch of stuff unread there, and that's okay too. Like whatever you need to do to get back to people, that's how you do it.
I think the thing about email is very similar, and we're having a discussion about this in the live stream chat too. The stuff we were talking about the Sunday maybe list, if something's truly important, it will kind of like find a way to bubble up to you. So getting to inbox zero, if you can do it, great. If that doesn't cause unnecessary stress and strain, great. But I wouldn't let it mess up other things going on in your life. Let's put it that way. For me personally, I use an app called Spark. It's on Mac and iOS. And then Gmail is my backend. I like Spark because what it can do is it can integrate with stuff like OmniFocus. So if an email is actionable, I just tap two buttons and it send it to OmniFocus and it can capture it to other places as well. But the thing I like about it is when it does that, it has a link back to the email that I can just tap on or click on from any of my devices and it goes straight back to that email. So that's great when you're going through your task manager and you want to get back to the original email. It's just one click away. I find that really, really helpful. On Windows and Android, I just use the stock Gmail app. That's the benefit of using kind of a cross-platform backend. I know some people like Fastmail. That's another good one. And of course, there's iCloud Mail as well. And of course, there's Office 365, which I also use for a different account as well. But yeah, Spark with Gmail is kind of like my main ones. And I'm the same thing. I don't have an executive assistant doing my email. Basically, what I do is I do triage. And then, like I said, if something's actionable, I'll send it to OmniFocus. If it's something I want to read, but not right now, I will send it to a read later app, which for me right now is called Matter. And so I just send it straight to Matter, and then I'll just read it later. And yeah, like I said, if something's important, it'll find its way back. All right. So another question we had in Slack was about our setup. Like, what tools do we use? What physical tools? What's our home and, or our office setup like? So let's talk about where you actually get work done, Dan. I know you tend to travel a lot, but you also have your home office as well. What does your home office look like? What are you using? And maybe tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, this is the segment that has like the most YouTube views usually when people show off their productivity setup at home. There's some sort of magical stuff there. I don't blame people. I watch those videos as well just to kind of get an idea and inspiration from others. But honestly, my setup is pretty simple. So I've had the same setup for the most part, and I might change it actually later this year because my MacBook Pro that is from 2013, it's the Retina MacBook Pro from 2013 that is kind of on its last legs, is going to be phased out at some point this year, I think. So I have that, and then I have a second monitor here, a 4K monitor that I use it with. And then I have like a webcam here, it's the Logitech Brio 4K. And I have a standing desk as well. And if you're watching this on video, like you might notice that I'm a little bit lower than normal. It's because I'm sitting this time. So I typically like to sit in the mornings because that's I find that when I do my creative work, I do that best. And then typically in the afternoons or after a huddle, I typically try to do most things standing. So whether that's the podcast or admin work or whatever it needs to be done or needs to be reviewed is typically when I do it standing. And so when I do stuff standing, I typically find that I might last for like 30 minutes or so, and then I need to take a break. Like I can't stand forever. Even if I have a nice mat, which I do here, by forcing yourself to stand, you also have this sense of urgency to get stuff done a little bit faster and kind of keep pace at it. Whereas if you're sitting, you can sit for hours, right? So I find that you get less distracted that way because you're just find yourself like, okay, I can't stand forever. Like this needs to be done. You know, if I'm done with this, I can sit down and take a break. So I find that that to be very helpful. And the standing desk I have is by Multitable. I've had it for 8 years now. And what I always recommend to people is if you get a standing desk, which I do for the most part recommend, get the biggest tabletop that you can afford. It's kind of a pain to go from having a small tabletop and then later upgrading to a bigger one than the other way. Typically, the more real estate you have on top on your table, the better, because you can just organize stuff and decorate it and however you want to use it. So I would always go for the biggest option if possible. As far as like everything else, the mic that I use is a Heil PR40. I've been using that for many years now. And the keyboard that I have is, I've been using this for a long time. It's the Logitech K750. So what's cool about this keyboard is that it charges using sunlight. So I never have like a battery issue or anything like that. It charges using sunlight. And so I've had it, I don't know, 6-7 years now, and it's been working fine. I never had to replace a battery or anything. So that's one big convenience that I really like. And I always recommend this keyboard as well. Definitely gets a little dirty. So make sure you clean it every now and then, especially if you have a white keyboard like I do. So that's one thing. And then the other one is the mouse. So I have the MX Master 2S mouse by Logitech. And again, we'll make sure we link and mention everything here in the show notes. But it's kind of like a gamer mouse in a way. But I find that the scrolling feature on the thumb, I'm right-handed, on the thumb is really nice and convenient when you're scrolling and clicking. And like if you want to go back to the previous page and that kind of thing. Another thing I would always recommend is that people have dedicated AirPods for just their workstation. So I have a AirPods version 2 here that I'm using right now as well as we're recording this. And I always have this with me, or here at the desk, so that if I have a meeting, I pop them in, immediately get connected, and I use Tooth Fairy in case it doesn't, so it makes it really easy to connect. And then I have another AirPods Pro that I just use for day-to-day use when I'm out and about. And I used to have just one, and I find that having a dedicated set of AirPods just for your workstation is a great idea. So I highly recommend doing that. It's worth the investment. And I see Brooke smiling because you know it's true.
Yeah, this is a recent change for me, and I did it on your recommendation because I would always complain about forgetting my AirPods Pro upstairs and I have to run up and get it, or maybe it would have trouble connecting. The only problem with this is, so I have some AirPods V3 that I just keep here at my desk for work, exactly like you said, but I guess I accidentally took them upstairs the other day and I left them in the living room, and my son, my oldest son, who notices everything, right away he saw it and he goes, "How come you have AirPods 3? Where did those come from?" And it turned into a big family discussion about how dad has two pairs of AirPods. And then now my wife is annoyed with me, and my kids tell all their friends, "Can you believe my dad has two AirPods?" So if you're going to do it, keep it on the down low. Keep it just a podcast. But for me, yeah, my office. My office is in the basement. I affectionately call it the dungeon. I also have a standing desk. And a tip for that, if you're going to have a standing desk, I used to have another standing desk that was a manual adjustment. It didn't have a motor. And what I found is I just never, ever changed it. So it was technically a standing desk, but once I had it in sitting mode, I just never lifted it. So now I have a fully standing desk with a bamboo top. I use it in standing mode while I'm standing right now, mainly for recordings and creation and stuff like that. I should actually use it standing more. So maybe that's an improvement I'll make. For chairs, I have a Herman Miller Mira chair that I bought off of Craigslist. It's okay. I wouldn't say I love it, but it's pretty good. I have a big Dell, or not that big, but I have a 27-inch Dell monitor. That's kind of like my main monitor. And then I have my MacBook Pro off to the side. That's a 2019 MacBook Pro. Very tempted by the M1 Max and the M1 Ultra and the M2s and stuff like that. So I'm going to be upgrading that at some point, but for now I'm fine. And then I have my laptop and my monitor both held up by arms to free up more space on the desk, and that works pretty well. That's a pretty recent change as well. I use a Surface Pro 7 as my Windows computer, so I always have it here on my desk, so when I want to do something on Windows, I just open it up. I really like it way more than I thought I would. It's a very functional little computer, but it also is like kind of like the size of a big thick iPad, so I'm a big fan of the Surface Pros. I have the same Logitech Brio 4K camera. I've talked many times on the podcast about my love for my Stream Deck, so I will link that in the show notes as well, that I use more and more and more. And for reading, this is a question we had, how do we read? For me, I tend to buy physical books sometimes. Sometimes I take books out from the library with ebooks and read them on my iPad. That's the book I'm currently reading is that way. But probably mostly I get them on the Kindle. So I have a Kindle Paperwhite, a couple years old, and that is probably one of my favorite devices. It's just such a good reading device. Yeah, so big fan of all those. And like Tan said, we'll link to all of that stuff in the show notes. All right, Tan, let's wrap it up. Do you have any like final workflow tips or anything else you wanted to mention for being productive?
Yeah, I would say the one thing I've kind of been reminded of recently that I want to put in here is if you listen to a couple episodes ago, I shared the story of how my backpack got stolen when I was traveling in Europe. And one of the things that I'm really grateful for was when I bought my new MacBook Air that replaced my old MacBook Air, I was up and running in like maybe less than an hour, hour and a half or so. And that was because I had online backups and everything was synced up in the cloud. So it was really easy to get up and running because everything was just syncing through the cloud that way. And so if there's anything that you can do today, I would just make sure that everything you store, everything that you sync up is done through the cloud as much as possible. So that if you're ever in a situation where you get a new computer or a new tablet or an additional machine or things get stolen or get broken down or whatever, and you need to get set up very quickly, having stuff stored in the cloud and having online backups has been such a lifesaver. So that's one pro tip that I want to make sure everyone has in place. So whether it's Dropbox, iCloud, or a combination of both, which is what I have. And then also for online backups, I use Backblaze. So that's stuff I've been using. And as far as like other things in terms of miscellaneous stuff, I would say the lists that I use, I find very helpful. I have like a few here that I want to list out here. So we mentioned the Someday Maybe list. I think that's a list that everyone should have. Just put stuff in there that at some point you want to do or some point you want to execute on or even purchase. So that's an easy list. Another list is what we call waiting for. So what are you waiting for? Like put it on that list as well. So if you don't have context in your app, having a list of stuff where you're waiting for things is very helpful as well. Another one is your checklist. So hoping that you use checklists, which I highly recommend you do, whether it's like your morning routine or as we like to call it, your rise ritual, or like what you pack when you go on the trip, right? Host your checklist in one place. I recommend you do that. It just saves so much time. I have like a checklist for example, home workouts and then hotel workouts as well. Like if I'm at a hotel, depending what material they have, I just know right away, okay, this is the workout I will do. And it's just, I don't have to think about it. You don't have to use a specific app. It's good to go. And then one specific notes that I find really helpful, and this is super random, is just body measurements in one specific note that you might use, like whether it's Apple Note or Evernote or whatever. So if you ever do any sort of shopping, whether it's online or somewhere in person, if you know your measurements, it makes it so much easier. So I tend to forget like what is my neck measurement or my shoulder width or like, you know, my pant size, or, and some brands have like specific measurements. So once you kind of know what your measurements are and what your sizing is for particular brands, I have it kind of stored in one particular note. So now I know like the twice a year when I go shopping, when there's sales online, I just know right away, okay, these are my measurements. These are my go-to brands. This is what is going to fit me, and it makes it really easy. So you don't have to convert like, oh, is 8 UK size, is that the same thing as 9 US or Italian 42? It's actually all the same stuff. So you don't have to think about it. You just know, okay, this is what it is. So I know it's super random, but I find these things very helpful.
That body measurement note is such a good idea. I never even thought to do it. I'm always like measuring this and that. I should just have a note with it. So that is an action item I'm going to be taking from this episode. All right. Speaking of action items, Tam, what should people do? We've given them a whole bunch of links. This is going to be a very link heavy show notes. Where do you recommend people start if they want to make a change to their productivity system?
Yeah, I know we covered a lot of ground here today. So I would say pick one thing that stood out to you today, whether it's making your body measurement note to installing a certain app or tool, or making that one purchase that is going to change the way you do things. Just execute on that and just reference back the show notes at some point to pick up on all the other stuff. So again, everything that we mentioned will be in the show notes here today. You can find them at theproductivityshow.com/413. And next week's episode is with the CEO of Boomerang. So remember, Boomerang is that app that allows you to send emails at a later time, which has been a game changer for many people. And we're going to be diving deeper into some of the tools that you can use with them, some workflows and some other ideas, and the future of productivity as well. So looking forward to that. And thanks, everybody, for listening, and for you as well. And we'll see you next Productive Monday.